Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Mem Hei Amud Aleph, 13 lines down. The Gemara here is continuing to discuss the machloka between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. The Mishnah in Maaser Sheni tells us there is a machloka between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai with the ability of a person to exchange Sla'im onto Dinarei Zahav, the ability to move silver coins onto gold coins. And we said there was a machloka between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish as to the nature of that machloket. Is that machloket simply about moving from silver coins onto gold coins, where the gold coins are in relationship to the silver coins considered to be peirot, and that's what causes the failure? Or does their machloket persist even when you're talking about fruits, produce, other items that you want to redeem? Even in that situation, if you were trying to redeem them onto gold coins, it wouldn't work, meaning that the din, that gold is not a coin, is not only in relationship to silver, but also in relationship to anything else. It doesn't have a status of a coin whatsoever. So that we saw is the machloket Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish as to whether the machloket is limited to silver onto gold coins, or does it persist even onto produce onto gold coins. Now the Gemara has been going through different questions or issues related to that. And now we have Tashma. Haporet sela mima'ot maaser sheni. Now here the word poret in general and the way it's used in the modern language means to break down into smaller component parts. It means to get change. But in this Mishnah, most of the Rishonim explain it that it means to consolidate. Consolidate the coins onto a single larger coin. The only one who is consistent with the Lashon HaPoret is the Rambam. The Rambam in the Perush HaMishnayot says here that the word poret means to break it down into smaller component parts. We're going to follow Rashi and the other Rishonim who say that it means to consolidate it onto a larger coin. So a poret sela mima'ot maaser sheni. Person wants to consolidate his ma'ot maaser sheni. Ma'ot here would refer to the smaller coins or nechoshet, copper coins. And he wants to consolidate them onto a sela kesef, onto a silver coin, which would make it easier for him to make the trip up to Yerushalayim because he has fewer coins to carry. So now, Beit Shammai omrim, b'chol sela ma'ot. Beit Shammai says that you have to convert all of the ma'ot into a sela. Beit Hillel omrim, b'shekel kesef, b'shekel ma'ot. Beit Hillel says that you can do half of it as kesef and half of it as ma'ot. A shekel kodesh or a sela are synonymous. A shekel kodesh or a sela is worth 2 shekel medina. And so here when it says a shekel and a shekel, it means half a sela and half a sela. So with half the sela, you can make it into silver, consolidate it to silver, and half of it you leave as copper coins. Now Rashi, the way that he explains the machloket over here between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel is that according to Beit Hillel, when he gets to Yerushalayim, he's going to have to convert the money back into spendable currency. So he's going to have to break the silver coins back down into copper coins. And if everybody consolidates their copper coins onto silver, then there's going to be basically a run on copper coins in Yerushalayim, because anybody who gets to Yerushalayim is going to be in need of copper coins, because they're only going to be bringing silver. They're going to need copper coins. So what Beit Hillel says is, take half the amount, consolidate it onto a silver coin, onto a sela, take the other half up to Yerushalayim in its form as copper coins, and then you can expend them in Yerushalayim, which will make their liquidity in Yerushalayim for copper coins. And then over time, when you need to convert later on, the copper coins are already existing or in the market in Yerushalayim. According to Beit Hillel, we tell you that you should keep it 50% as copper, remaining copper coins. The other 50% you should convert into silver coins. The way Rashi then phrased it is, according to Beit Shammai, you can even convert all of it onto silver. So according to Rashi, it seems optional what you do according to Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai permits you not only to convert half of it, but to convert the entire amount into silver coinage, which makes it easier for you to go up to Yerushalayim. The Rabbeinu Tam over here takes issue with that because then it turns out that this is an example of a case where Beit Shammai is the Kula and Beit Hillel is the Chumrah. We know we have a perek in the Mishnayot Ediyot as to all the Mishnayot in Shas where Beit Shammai is the Kula and Beit Hillel is the Chumrah. This Mishnah is not amongst the Mishnayot that are mentioned there. And therefore, the Rebbeinu Tam says it can't be that Beit Shammai is the Kula, the way that Rashi is explaining. And therefore, he explains that when Beit Shammai says, that's the way I said it before, is that Beit Shammai obligates you, demands that you convert all the money onto the silver coins. It's not an option. Not, wait, you can convert them if you want, half, or if you'd like, you put all of them. No, Beit Shammai says you must put all of them onto the silver coins because we're afraid of the losses of Hekdesh. The problem with copper coins, and we've noted this before, the Gemara will mention it again, is that they are mitapish, that they go bad, that they oxidize, they turn green, they lose their value, they don't have staying power. And so therefore, if you're to take them up to Yerushalayim, there's a possibility that some of those coins will go bad or not be usable anymore. And therefore, for the benefit of Hekdesh, we don't want you bringing the copper coins, because one who loses, not you, it's Maestro Sheni that's going to lose out over here. So that's the view of the Rebbeinu Tam over here, as well as many of the Rishonim, as to the Mishnah being a Chumrah of Beit Shammai demanding that you do it in that manner. So now the Gemara says, Hashto, the Beit Shammai, Legabe Prite Mechalalilin. Over here, according to Beit Shammai, you're allowed to utilize it vis-a-vis Prite, Legabe Dahava Mibaye, vis-a-vis gold, it's even a question. So here, if you think that you have the ability to move the Peirot Meiser Sheni onto coinage, and over here it's clear that he moved them onto the coinage that was copper at first, because otherwise why does he need to consolidate it onto silver? The only reason he needs to consolidate it onto silver is because he already exchanged Peirot Meiser Sheni onto the copper coins, and now he's trying to consolidate the copper coins onto silver. So over here, if you have the ability to exchange Peirot onto copper coins, gold coins, you have to tell me that you have the ability to exchange the Peirot Meiser Sheni onto gold coins. What the Gemara believes is that a gold coin certainly is a better form of currency than the copper coins. And if that's the case, then if you can exchange your Peirot onto copper coins, you certainly can exchange them onto gold coins. And that would be a question in the opinion that believes that Beit Shammai argues, even in moving your produce onto gold coins, that gold coins are not considered to be currency whatsoever. Here you see that they think copper coins are currency. Certainly they're going to think gold coins are currency. My answer is, Shani Prite, Ba'achu de Sagin Harife. This is what we noted before, that in cities that allow for the usage of copper coins, where it is a currency, they are more of a currency than the gold coins or than silver coins. The problem with copper coins is they're not accepted in all places. Certain cities accept them, certain cities don't accept them. So that's the problem, is that they are not universally accepted as currency. The other side of the coin for copper coins is that when they are accepted, they are liquid currency that is utilized by everyone, much more so than gold. And so that's what the Gemara says here. You can't prove anything from copper. If in this city copper is used, then that copper is definitely currency. It is used in a liquid manner, much more so than gold. And so for that reason, you can't just say because they allow it to be exchanged onto copper, then obviously they will allow it to be exchanged onto gold, because copper does have a side to it, which it makes it more currency-like than gold. All right, so that's the end of the first Lashon of the Gemara. Gemara says, Lishna Achrina, an alternate version of this machloket between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, and Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish explain the machloket. Amri lo Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, this is the version of the machloket according to Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. Chanamar machloket bislaim al dinarim. One of them says the machloket is moving silver coinage and consolidating it onto gold coinage. The Beit Shammai savri hakesef, kesef rishon, velo kesef sheni. That you're allowed to move maaser sheni onto money, but only on one exchange. You're not then allowed to exchange money onto money. Over here, the word kesef that is used is not meaning silver. It means kesef in the more generic sense of money. So the Torah, when it permits you, but sarta hakesef biyadecha, the Hei Yidiyah says hakesef, that only that kesef you're allowed to exchange onto. From there, you may not exchange it onto other coinage. So Beit Shammai says no, moving it from silver to gold. Beit Hillel sarver hakesef kesef riba, that ha and then kesef is a ribui to tell you vafilu kesef sheni, that you're allowed to move it from cash onto other cash, meaning from silver onto gold. Aval peirot al dinarim, but fruits, produce, onto gold coins. Divrei hakol mechalalin. Everybody agrees you're allowed to exchange it because gold is considered to be a coin. The failure of gold here is not that it is a currency or a coinage. The failure is that you're trying to move from silver to gold, and that's what's restricted. Because in this instance, gold is the first coin, and therefore it's permitted. That's why it's considered to be a currency. The only failure in the other case is that you're moving from silver to gold. The reason you're moving from silver to gold is because gold is the only item that has more value than silver, therefore you're going to consolidate it that way. But the failure is not in gold, the failure is in moving from Kesef Rishon to Kesef Sheni. The other opinion believes that even moving produce onto gold coins would fail, which would indicate that there's a failure inherently in gold. According to the one who says that the machloket is about moving silver onto gold, why have the machloket me moving from silver to gold? Why don't they just argue about moving from silver to silver? If the whole problem is just the moving it from one coinage to another coinage, then it should be irrespective of the type of coinage. So I said before that moving it from silver to gold makes sense because then you're consolidating. Why would you want to move from one seller to another seller? So now the Tosafot raises that question. You can see this. He says, Rivan lo garsinanle. The Rivan does not have this girsa here. Dama yichalel aslaim acherim. For what reason would you exchange from one silver coin to another silver coin? It says, Mio lo hakasha. That's not really a question. Sharishonim einan charifim lo tziyam b'Yerushalayim kama ashneim, shem matbe acher. You could have two sela, both of the same size, the same silver, but one of them is accepted more readily, universally, or in Yerushalayim. So he wants to move it from the silver coin that might be good currency in the local area, but he wants to move it onto coins that are more universally accepted. And therefore he does. There's a reason for him to move it from one sela to the next sela. Tosafot then asks from the Mishnah in Maaser Sheni, which says that when a person gets to a bind where they mixed up monies of Maaser Sheni with monies of Chulin, how do you deal with that issue? So you have one sela of Chulin, one sela of Maaser Sheni, and now they got mixed together. You don't know which one is which. So the easiest way to do it would be to say, take one sela and say, if this is the sela of Maaser Sheni, then I'm expending it as Maaser Sheni. If this is the sela of Chulin, then I want the sela of Maaser Sheni to be redeemed onto this coin. And then this coin will now be the Maaser Sheni. It will take on the Kedusha of the Maaser Sheni. There, the Gemara, when it discusses it as well as the Mishnah, indicates that you're only allowed to be mechalelet onto copper coins. You're not allowed to be mechalelet silver to silver. In other words, it says, Mipnei she'amru mechalelin kesef al nechoshet midochak, that you're allowed to, in an extenuating circumstance, exchange the silver onto copper. But Rashi explains over there that you're not allowed to move it from silver to silver. Mishum de'ei mechalim kesef al kesef afilu midochak. Even when you're in a bind, you're not allowed to move from silver to silver. So now you see that there's a almost explicit Mishnah saying that you can't move silver to silver. What's the Gemara's question over here? That's supportive of the Rivan's claim that this should not be in the Gemara. He says, V'yesh lamar, d'hatam aslaim shavim ze kazeh, l'kachei mechalalin. That's the problem. The problem over there is that's the exact same coin. It's the exact same coin. You've done nothing to effectuate an exchange. An exchange can only be where you're doing something that's beneficial. Whether that means breaking it down into change, into smaller coinage, consolidating it into larger coins, moving it from a coin that's less acceptable to more acceptable, all of those are valid reasons to exchange the coin. But simply to move it from one coin to the other coin, there's no reason for that, there's no validity to that, and therefore, it can't work. There's no possible exchange. So that's how Tosafot deals with the issue. So now the Gemara says, so why don't they argue about Slaim L'Slaim? It says, "Iflagei b'slaim aslaim," because had they mentioned their machloket as being between silver and silver, havamina ani milei b'slaim aslaim. I would have thought the failure here is moving from silver to silver. Avav slaim al dinarim modelahu beit hilal beit shemai. But when you're moving from silver to gold, over there beit hilal will agree to beit shemai. The dahavla gabi kaspa peirabi, because gold in relationship to silver is considered to be produce velo mechalalin, and therefore you cannot redeem it. Meaning that if you explain their machloket simply being about from silver to silver, you would have thought that Beit Hillel permits silver to silver because silver is always deemed as currency. But if it was silver and gold, maybe Beit Hillel would not allow it. So therefore the Mishnah says that it's speaking about silver to gold to tell you, even in that instance, Beit Hillel believes you're allowed to move the coinage from silver to gold. Tashma. So now we bring the subsequent Mishnah from the Mishnah that we started today's daf with. And this is a Pareit Sela Shemaisha Sheni Bi Yerushalayim. Here someone is bringing the money to Yerushalayim, expending the Ma'ot Maisu Sheni. So according to Rashi and the other Rishonim, the previous Mishnah was speaking about outside of Yerushalayim. That's why it was speaking about consolidating the coins. Over here, we're speaking in Yerushalayim, which is where you expend the Maisu Sheni. So now it's talking about breaking it into change. On the other hand, for the Rambam, they're both speaking about breaking it into change. The question is, where? One Mishnah speaks about the change being done outside of Yerushalayim, and one Mishnah speaks about the change being done in Yerushalayim. That's the way the Rambam explains it. But here you have a Sela Shemaisu Sheni in Yerushalayim. Beit Yomim Arim B'chol HaSela Ma'ot. You must break down the Sela into copper coins entirely. Beit Yomim B'shekel Kesa B'shekel Ma'ot. You divide it in half. Half of the Sela you break down into copper. Other half a Sela you take a Shekel, which is basically a half a Sela, or a half a Shekel Kodesh. A Shekel you take it in silver. According to Rashi, Beit Shammai again says it's optional. You can exchange the whole amount if you want, or you can split it in half. Beit Hillel says you must split it in half. According to the Rabbeinu Tam, again here, Beit Shammai must be saying that you only can break it down into copper coins, because otherwise Beit Shammai would turn out to be the Kula and not the Chumra. But Eino Chanami, the Yerushalmi says that Beit Shammai is the Kula here, and therefore Rashi's interpretation would be in congruence with the Yerushalmi, who says that Beit Shammai is the Kula. The reason for this is that Beit Hillel says we're not certain that the person is going to be able to expend all of the money in Yerushalayim in this one trip. So we want him to break it in half and say he'll spend the copper coins and then he'll have the remainder on a silver coin which he can return home with and then come back the next time to eat it in Yerushalayim. The other hand, if he breaks it all down into copper coins this time and then he's unable to utilize all the copper coins, he's not going to change them back to silver. So he's going to have to pay the changer twice. Wants to break them down into copper and wants to consolidate back onto silver. Beit Shammai, for the same reason, says just the opposite. He says, if you only break down half of it into copper coins, you're going to have to go again and break it down into copper coins. You're going to have to pay the Shulchani 2-3 times to break the coin down into copper. You may as well do it in one shot and only pay once. So the question is, how to save the most money or make it that it's the most efficient way to break the money down. So there's their machloket. Where it says, Hashto kaspo de gabe prite mechalalinan. Over here, where silver to copper, we allow you to break it down. V'lo amrinan kesev rishon v'lo kesev sheni. What happens to that principle of you can only exchange onto money once, not onto money twice? Over here, you're moving from silver into copper. The gabe da'avo d'choshimine mi amrinan kesev rishon v'lo kesev sheni. And when you're talking about moving from silver to gold, where gold is an upgrade, where it's worth more, it's more chashuv than silver, there you're going to tell me only one type of coin, not two coins? So the Gemara is saying, wait a minute, how could it be that your principle or thesis of what the machloket is about here is, are you allowed to move money onto a second form of currency? Is it only once that you get that opportunity, not twice? Well, if that's the case, when you're in Yerushalayim, why are you allowed to change the silver into copper? You should be able to have to expend the silver directly on whatever merchandise is in Yerushalayim. And if we allow you to move silver onto copper, we certainly should allow you to move silver onto gold. That's the nature of the question. Amarova, Yerushalayim komitavt. You're asking about Yerushalayim? Shiny Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is different because there, you're not trying to consolidate or redeem the monies, but rather you're trying to expend the monies there. Dichtibe, that you can use the money or utilize it to expend it on whatever you wish or whatever you please. Now the truth is that there are requirements of what you spend the money of Maisu Sheni on. It has to be pre-mi-pri. It has to be something that reproduces itself. It also has to be gdulei karka, something that grows from the ground. Gemara deals with why bakar and son are considered to be gdulei karka. But there are rules about what you expend the Maisu Sheni on. It has to be edible food items inside of Yerushalayim. So why is the Pasuk telling you that you're allowed to change silver into copper? Why is copper considered to be quote-unquote food over here? So the Bali Tosafot already asked that question. They say, V'yesh lamar, d'lo mimati mel mayim emelach. The only thing excluded from the requirements of what you buy with Maaser Sheni is to exclude water and salt. Aval lo pruta, but not copper coins. The pruta kone bakar vitzon davi peri mi pri. Because copper facilitates your ability to buy. I mean, if you're using silver coins, it would be very hard for you to expend the money in Yerushalayim. So when you exchange it to copper, it's as if you're buying produce or whatever you're supposed to buy with Maaser Sheni, because that's going to facilitate your ability to buy in Yerushalayim. So that's one way to deal with it. The other way to deal with it is b'chol asher taven nafshecha. Whatever you choose, whatever you please, you might do with the monies of Maaser Sheni. So as far as food items, there are limitations on what you can buy. But if it's a non-food item, you can expend it any way you want, as long as it's going to facilitate a purchase of produce or food item in the end. So therefore, maybe it's not limited like the other items. But either way, what the Gemara is saying is that inside of Yerushalayim, you have different rules than outside of Yerushalayim. Inside of Yerushalayim, where you're trying to expend the money and you're trying to make it feasible for you to buy produce or meat inside of Yerushalayim, then it makes sense that you can exchange it onto the prutot, because either they facilitate it or they themselves are an exchange towards consuming the Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim. But when you're outside of Yerushalayim, it's a different story. There it gives you one chance to redeem the fruits onto coinage, not a second chance, since you can't prove anything from Yerushalayim. Tosafot says, isn't it obvious that Yerushalayim is different than outside? I mean, that the whole din mentions Yerushalayim. It's a focal point of this Mishnah, and it's very clear that the Mishnah is different because of the fact that it's in Yerushalayim. So Tosafot says that the Gemara already knew that, because the Gemara never brought this Mishnah. On the previous Lashon, or the previous statements, we don't bring this Mishnah as a question, because the Gemara understood that inside of Yerushalayim is different than outside of Yerushalayim. Just because you can exchange silver onto copper in Yerushalayim doesn't mean that you should be able to take silver onto gold outside of Yerushalayim. So why in this instance does the Gemara bring it as a question? Because even though it's pshita that you'd be mechalek between Yerushalayim and outside of Yerushalayim, but over here, if you say the reason is kesef rishon and not kesef risheni, then it doesn't make so much sense to differentiate between inside of Yerushalayim and outside of Yerushalayim. Once you say the reasoning is you can't move from one coinage to another coinage, then in and out of Yerushalayim shouldn't make so much of a difference. And that's why the Gemara asked the question. In the end, the Gemara answers that it is different, and that inside of Yerushalayim, it also has that type of difference. But Tosafot says that you're right. Yerushalayim being different is a given. Just happens to be in this case, you might have thought that Yerushalayim shouldn't be different, and the Gemara in the end answers that it is also different in this case. Okay, Tashma. Aparet sela mi ma'ot ma'isur sheni, beit shemai omrim b'chol ha'sela ma'ot, beit elomrim b'shekel kesef b'shekel ma'ot. So here you have a breakdown of the coinage. And it says you're allowed to break the coins down or consolidate the coins onto a single larger coin. The Mishnah we quoted before. Even according to Beit Shammai, you're allowed to break it down. They just force you to break it down entirely from silver down to copper coins. Beit Hillel says you can split it half into silver, half into copper. But what you see here is both Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel outside of Yerushalayim allow you to move it from one coin to another coin. So that can't be the reason. Ela de kuli alma hakesef kesef riba. Everybody subscribes to this limud that you're allowed to move it from one currency to another currency because of the ribuy of the word kesef. Vafilu kesef sheni, even if it's from one set of coinage to another set of coinage, as long as there's some upgrade in the movement from one currency to the other. Ela itmar the Rabbi Yochanan v'Shimon Lakish hachi itmar. So then, what is the machloket between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish about the machloket of Beit Shammai Hillel? One of them believes that the machloket is limited to silver coinage onto gold coinage, which is similar to what we said before, but now the reason is, the Beit Shammai Sabri, Gazrinan Shema Yishaheh Aliyotav. And now what we're worried about is that this person will tarry in order to consolidate. The Zimlin Delo Malu Zuze Bidinara. Sometimes he doesn't have sufficient silver coins to consolidate onto a gold coin. Velo Misik. And therefore he doesn't go up to Yerushalayim. He waits in order to fill a full gold coin. Because that's the easiest way to go up to Yerushalayim, was with a single gold coin. So now he only has enough to fill a quarter, a half of a gold coin. So what is he going to do? Instead of bringing up the Maaser Sheni, he's going to wait until he consolidates and has more Maaser Sheni to put onto this gold coin. And that's why there goes there, we don't allow you to exchange from silver onto gold, because of this fear that you might tarry to fill the gold coin. Beit Hillel Savri, lo gazrina en shemi yisheher al yotav. That we don't worry about that. Because if he's unable to consolidate onto a gold coin, he'll go up with his silver coins. Meaning that he'll go up with partially gold, partial silver. He'll try as much as possible to consolidate it. But if he's unsuccessful, he'll go up. And he's not going to wait to fill the gold coin, because the silver coins are still not so heavy or so cumbersome that he's not going to bring up the silver coin. Everybody agrees that if you're trying to move peirot directly onto gold coins, gold is a currency, and you will be successful at doing that. The reason being there that Beit Shammai doesn't have the fear of you waiting to consolidate onto gold. So with silver coins, you can wait around forever. Silver is not going to go bad. You can wait around forever until you consolidate them onto the gold coins. That's our fear. With peirot, if you're going directly from the produce onto the gold coin, nobody's waiting around to consolidate onto a gold coin, because in the meantime, the fruits will go bad and they'll spoil. So if he's waiting around to get more produce in order to put it onto a gold coin, the original produce in the meantime will go bad, and then he won't have anything to consolidate onto the gold coin. So there you don't have this gzerah. In the other opinion, like we saw before, in the first lashon that we had brought here of this machloket, is that the machloket persists even when you're doing produce directly onto gold coins, meaning that gold is not considered to be a currency, according to Beit Shammai, in this explanation of the machloket. According to this lashon that suggests that mina Torah, everybody agrees that it's mutar to use the gold coins or exchange the silver onto gold, both Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, but Rabbanan the Gazru Bey, and the Rabbanan were Gozer, meaning that's the Gzeirah that Beit Shammai spoke about. Haini Diktani, therefore the language in the Mishnah makes sense. It says, Yaseh velo Yaseh. He should do, or he should not do. I mean, that language of should do or not do is L'chatchila. Well, L'chatchila he should do it, or L'chatchila he should not do it. So that makes sense when you're talking about a Gzeirah de Rabbanan. According to the first lashon, where we said their machloket is a Torah level machloket, as to whether you are successful at converting the coinage from silver to gold, michalalinan velo michalalinan mi ba'ilei. It should say you are successful at exchanging it, or you're unsuccessful at exchanging it. It shouldn't say you should do it, you shouldn't do it. It has nothing to do with should or shouldn't. It is whether it's successful or not successful. Kasho. That is a difficulty with explaining it according to the first lashon that we had. So in the end, we have two explanations of this machloket between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. The first one says that they're arguing fundamentally about whether you can move coinage from silver to gold. And then, according to Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, that machloket might persist into gold in general. And here, according to the second lashon, after we fixed it up, the second lashon says that they argue not about whether gold is a currency, because gold is definitely a currency. It's just a question of a gzeirah. Do we have a gzeirah about gold coins that we don't want people moving onto gold coins because of the problem of tarrying or delaying the bringing of the Meisr Sheni up? Beit Shammai says yes. Beit Hillel says no. And then the question of Yochanan Reish Lakish is that persist to produce onto gold coins as well. Do we restrict that as well? And so therefore, the Gemara here says, or favors that second Lashon now, because the second Lashon makes more sense in the language of the Mishnah, which says, when we have this circumstance, Beit Shammai Omrim, lo yaseh, and Beit Hillel is matir, says it's mutar. The language of yes and no is a language of gezeirah derabanan. A language of successful or unsuccessful would have been a language of deoraita. And therefore, as we mentioned yesterday, the Rabbeinu Chanan over here says, "Ve'chin sugya d'shmaita kehai lishna u'mishum gzeira." The Gemara here clearly concludes that the second lashon, or second version, is better, and therefore the machloket is explained by a gzeira. The sugya and the Beit Hillel dahava tivavi, and therefore, according to the sugya, according to Beit Hillel, gold is a going currency. It's a functional currency that you can use. Ustam la nazav koneh takesef. In our Mishnah that says that a zav koneh takesef, demashma dahava peiro, that says that gold is considered to be produce or merchandise, not a currency. Have itlan leukma the gabe kaspa belachut. That's only vis-a-vis silver. Have peiro about chol mili. Anything else could go in mekach umemkar bekelim upeirot. Any merchandise, commercial transactions that involve merchandise and gold coins, they will be considered a currency. Ulin yamatana, and gifts too, tivavi, it would be considered to be a currency. So then the Rabbeinu Chananel also notes the thing that Tosfa quoted in the name of Rabbeinu Chananel yesterday, which is, Ela amar gon, halacha dahava peiriyavi. The Gaon, Rabbi Gaon, says that gold is always considered to be merchandise or a commodity. And you can even use it in a kinyan chalipin or acquire it with a kinyan chalipin. And Tosafot points out that the Rabbeinu Chananel was not so comfortable with the fact that Rabbi Gaon said that, because of the fact that the Gemara seems to indicate otherwise, that the Gemara's conclusion seems to think that gold is a currency. And so Tosafot dealt with that question yesterday by telling us that there is a difference in the time periods. The time of the Amoraim, gold was used as a currency. Maybe not as liquid or frequently as silver, but it was still a currency. By the time you get to Rav Haigon, so gold was only used as a commodity, not used as a coinage or a currency. And therefore, the Rav Haigon says, in our time, gold is no longer a currency, even though the Gemara's conclusion is otherwise. Right now we move on to a new sugya, Itmar, Rav Velevi. We have makloga between Rav and Levi. Rav and Levi are both Talmidim of Rabbi. Levi is mentioned many times in Shas as a Talmid of Rabbi. He really sits in that in-between generation between the Tanaim and Amoraim. Rav is at the tail end of that transition, because we know the Gemara in some places calls Rav Tanu Poliku. The Rav is given the power of a Tano, but he's really the first generation of Amoraim when he moves out to Babel. So here you have a machlok between Rav and Levi. Chadamar Matbea Nase Chalipin. One of them says that a coin can be chalipin. The chadamar in matbea nase chalipin. The other one says that a coin cannot be chalipin. Just as an introduction before we explain the machloket, there are different ways in which to effectuate a transaction. When you have money, or when you're purchasing something, you could be buying it, and that's the way that we do it today, is that you're exchanging the money for the object. You're paying money, and the transaction is effectuated by the fact that you're giving the money and therefore buying the item by giving the cash in order to acquire the item. That's one method of acquisition. Another method of acquisition would be barter. If you involve no money in the matter, but you simply are bartering two items, then the barter is effectuated by the kinyan that you make on one of the objects. That causes the other object to be locked in, or the exchange to be locked in, that we saw yesterday. There's a third type of acquisition, which is also called the kinyan chalipin or kinyan sudar, which is where you use a representative object in order to effectuate the kinyan. So the classic case is where you give a handkerchief. You're not exchanging the handkerchief for the other item. You're simply giving the handkerchief to represent the exchange and to create what's called gmirat hadat, to have everybody realize that this is the finality to this, and this is really happening, and this is locking everything in. And that's called a kinyan sudar. So over here, the Gemara is bringing a machlok between Rav and Levi about the effectiveness of coins in exchanging or doing chalipin. We already know from our Mishnah that coins or damim fail to create an exchange when they're used as currency. Meaning that currency or damim, ma'ot, einan konot. They don't create a kinyan. Again, we'll get to in the Gemara, machlok Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, whether that is midoraita, they don't work. Or midoraita does work, midorabanan, they were gozer, that it doesn't work. But either way, paying or using money as currency to pay for the object does not generate a kinyan. Until you make a kinyan on the merchandise itself, the simple paying of the money will not generate a kinyan or a finality to the transaction. But here, the Gemara wants to know about matbeya's relationship if you don't use it as currency, but rather use it as a chalipin. That you're really exchanging it. It's hard to argue that you're bartering the money for the other item, because then in essence what you're doing is paying money. Money is stored value. To say that you're bartering the money for the other object is very hard to argue. So therefore what it must be saying here is that third type of kinyan I said, which is the kinyan sudar, which is that you're using the money as a representative object to generate the transaction. So instead of using the money as a vehicle of purchase, like money would be used, and you're purchasing the item, but rather you're saying the money is acting as a sudar, as the handkerchief here, the representative item that is you make the kinyan on in order to effectuate the transaction. So now what the Gemara brings is this machlok between Rav and Levi, whether matbea naseh chalipin. Can money, instead of acting as money, can it act as an object of chalipin? So we have a machlok, and one of them says that matbea can be chalipin, and one of them says that matbea cannot act as chalipin. And Rashi explains that explicitly, that here the issue is, shelo b'torat mekach u'memkar. You're not doing it as a transaction, ela b'torat kinyan. You're using it as the object of the kinyan, kederach shekonim b'sudar. the same way that you would use a handkerchief. Shakoneh notain sudar lamakneh, that the buyer gives to the seller the sudar. V'hu makno lo akarko or metaltalei mimishicha. And then he gives him back the other object in a kinyan mishicha. Once he takes the sudar, that finalizes the transaction. We learn this out from the pasuk in Rut, which is shalach ish na'alo v'natan de're'ehu, that he took off the shoe and he gave it to his friend. Tomorrow we'll see more about that, machloket Rav Nachman Rav Sheshit, about exactly how this transaction works or what is the source for this. But now, if you can use a representative item as the kinyan or vehicle for the kinyan, can the coin, instead of being used as currency, can be used as that representative item? So we have the machloket here. And Amar Papa, my time of demand Amar in matbea naseh chalipin. What is the reason that it fails? Meaning, why would you think it doesn't work as a representative kinyan? Rav Papa says, the one who says the matbea naseh chalipin mishum the date atzuroto. Because the person has in mind the tzura. The tzura ta'avida debatlo. And the tzura, the shape, the mint of the coin, can be erased over time, is rubbed down over time. So Rashi says that it means, she'ena matbea chashuv, ela yedesha tzura shibo. The coin only has significance because of the image is on in there. Hilkach avalei davar she'enu misuyam v'shalem. And therefore it fails in the necessity that the object used for a kinyan chalipin, a kinyan sudar, must be something that is defined, whole, and discrete. And so the problem here is that the coin, it fails in that level because the tzura is so important, and the tzura can be erased. And since the tzura can be erased, it's something that does not have, some other Rishonim say the word permanence, but it doesn't have long-lasting quality to it. But Rashi seems to indicate that it's not considered to be a discrete or whole object, because in the end it could disappear. And therefore it fails in its necessity to be a Davar Mesuyam V'Shalem. That's Rashi's interpretation. Most Rishonim, the Ramban, and many others say that the problem here is that the person's focus on the coin is not on the coin, but rather on the tzura. This is the same reason it fails by Kiddushin. Why, when we have Kiddushin, we have to use a very plain object to be the consideration for the Kiddushin? Is because of this problem of data la tzura, which comes up also like with a ring. If you give a ring, maybe sometimes the ring's value is not the inherent value of the ring, but rather the object, the sentimental value, the writing on the ring. So if you gave a ring that has some verbiage on it, or some sort of decoration or design on it, then the woman might be focused on the beauty or on that. And that item doesn't have inherent value to it. That's an intangible value, and doesn't derive from the inherent value of the object. And in order to have consideration for marriage, she needs inherent value. And so the failure there is that she's focused on the intangible aspects, not on the inherent value of the item. And so too, they say the same thing over here. The person's focus on the tzura means that the intangible aspect of it is what the person's focused on, and not on the inherent value of the item. Here, according to the Ramban and the many other Rishonim, the problem here is that the focus of the individual is on that minting or the tzura, which doesn't have an inherent value. And one of the requirements for a kinyan sudar is that the object used has inherent value. So the person's focused on the wrong thing, not on the inherent value, but on the intangible aspects, just like by the marriage. That causes a problem, because then she's not getting the consideration she needs for the marriage. So it's over here, the object that you're using, the person's not focused on that coin itself, but rather on the image that's on the coin, which is not the inherent value of the coin. So that's how other Rishonim express it. But because of that, it fails here as an ability to use a kinyan chalipin. Obviously, the other party believes that it's not an issue, and you could argue for many reasons why it's not an issue, whether people don't usually focus on the tzura, whether the tzura lasts long enough where it won't be an issue, and that there are other ways to explain what the machloket is. Now, Tosafot points out over here, and Rashi himself says it, he says, the argument here is not the argument of Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshit later on. Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshit are going to argue on tomorrow's daf as to whether a kinyan chalipin can be effectuated with items besides what we call a nal, a kli. Nal is a shoe, is a kli. So can you do a kinyan chalipin only with kelim, just like a nal? Or does kinyan chalipin work with objects besides a kli, like peirot, like fruits, other merchandise? Can you use it for a kinyan chalipin? That is a machloket between Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshit. But what Rashi points out is, this machloket between Rav and Levi has no impact on that machlok between Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshet. Even if you believe that you can only use a kli, that doesn't have any impact on what your view is with regards to a coin. The reason being because otherwise, why don't Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshet argue about a coin? Because then that would be the same machloket. So what Rashi points out is that this machloket is not connected to Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshet's machloket. And Tosafot is much more explicit about it. He says that Ein Matbeah Naseh Chalipim Afilu Rav Sheshet. Even according to Rav Sheshet, the Lo Ba'i Kli, who says that you don't need a Kli. Pasal Hacha Matbeah. Over here he says Matbeah is problematic like Rashi. Beim Tomar the Rav Nachman, that requires a Kli. Then how can a coin be a Kli? How could he be arguing on Rav Velevi? Beish Lamar, the Metbeya Mikra Shapir Kli. A coin is called a Kli. It is called a utensil. Tosafot goes on to explain why a coin is a Kli. He brings other opinions that maybe a coin is a Kli because it's used, it goes out, it's expended or utilized in that manner. He rejects that, but he says that you have to say that a coin is considered a Kli, at least according to Rav Nachman. Tomorrow's daf, Tosafot will say that it can't be that Rav Nachman and Sheshet argue on Rav and Levi because Rav and Levi are Kadmonim. They're the earliest of the Amoraim, and there's no way that Rav Sheshet and Rav Nachman are going to be arguing on them. So therefore, it has to be that Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshet's machloket is independent of what you think here with regards to Matbeya. And that's what Tosafot just showed us, that even according to Rav Sheshet, that you can use Peirot for Kinyan Chalipin, he might agree that a Matbeya won't work. And even according to Rav Nachman, who says you must use a Kli for a Kinyan Chalipin, he might agree that a Matbeya works because a Matbeya has the same status as a Kli. So therefore, we make those two machlokot independent. Now the Gemara says, Tznan, our Mishnah, Hazav koneta kesef. The gold acquires the silver. My love, bichalipin. How was that done? Wasn't it done or effectuated through a kinyan chalipin? And therefore, the way that it was effectuated is that the coin was used as a chalipin. Mar says, lo, bidamim. Now it was done as a purchase. That's why it worked. Wait a minute. Why should it be then that the Zahav causes you to acquire the silver? It should obligate you. The difference being that if the Kinyan is done as a Mekach u'Memkar, as a transaction, as a monetary purchase, then when you make a Kinyan on the merchandise, that now obligates you to pay for the merchandise. It doesn't make your money go to the other party. It just makes you now obligated. You, the individual, now obligated to pay, and then you have to bring the cash to pay for it. On the other hand, in a Kinyan Chalipin, in a standard barter transaction, once you make a Kinyan on one side of the transaction, it automatically makes the other side of the transaction go into the other person's possession. So if you're exchanging bananas for a cow, when the individual picks up the bananas and makes a Kinyan on the bananas, the other party also now acquired the cow in that exchange. So the way that the Mishnah is expressed over here, it says, a Zahav koneh tekesef. That when you make a Kinyan on the Zahav, you automatically get possession of the silver. That sounds like a barter transaction, not a acquisition or a payment through money. Because if it was a payment for money, then when you made a Kinyan on the Zahav, you now become obligated to pay the silver to the other individual. The silver doesn't automatically go into his possession. You now become chayav to provide the value you promised. And then you have to pay him in the silver coins for that. So the language of the Mishnah seems to indicate a kinyan nechalipin. Gemara says, Tnei hazahav mechayev. Emend the Mishnah to read hazahav mechayev et kesef. That it causes you to be chayav in kesef. Now the Baal Tosafot say that they're not literally emending the Mishnah. They're just saying the explanation of the word koneh over here has a broader meaning. Koneh doesn't always mean that you acquire physically the object. Koneh means that you bought it, like the way you would use it today. You bought something, that means you're obligated now to pay for it. And that's the meaning of the word koneh, that means michayev. Where it says, hachanami mistavra, that makes a lot of sense, miktani seifa. Because the second line in the Mishnah is, hakesef eno koneh et hazahav. Kesef is unsuccessful at acquiring zahav. If you say that the exchange is a monetary exchange, now we know why it fails, because he made a kinyan on the money. Kinyan on the money, or paying of money, does nothing in terms of locking in the transaction. And that's the failure in the Mishnah. That's what we mean, that the gold is considered to be a commodity. The silver is considered to be a currency. The tiva pera lo koni. And currency cannot acquire a commodity. Eliamart bichalipin, if you say the exchange here was done through a kinyan chalipin, tavayu lekanu ahadodi. If you say to us that a kinyan chalipin works even with coins, then if the Mishnah is speaking about a kinyan chalipin, it should work in both directions. It should work when you make a kinyan on the zahav, because that's the commodity, but it should also work when you make a kinyan on the silver, because the silver is not acting as money, it's acting as chalipin, a representative value, and it should work. So therefore, it must be the explanation of the Mishnah as a case of kinyan damim and not a kinyan chalipin. Ve'ol tanya, we have a braita. A kesef eno kone et azav. Silver is unsuccessful at acquiring gold. Keitzad, what's the scenario? Machar lo 25 dinar shel kesef bedinar shel zav. He sold him 25 dinare kesef for one gold coin. Afal pishe mashach et kesef, even though he made a kinyan on the silver, lo kana. That does not lock the transaction. Achim shochet azav, until you make a kinyan on the zahav. The reason being that the silver is considered to be currency. The gold is considered to be a commodity or the merchandise. You can only make a kinyan on the merchandise to effectuate the transaction or finalize the transaction. You can't do that with currency. If you say that you're using it as a currency, that's why it fails. If you think that the braita is speaking about a case of chalipin, nikne, it should work. Because when you make a kinyan on the silver, you're not making a kinyan on the silver as currency, you're making it as a representative kinyan, as if it's a sudar. If you think that matbea nasich chalipin, and the vehicle for the acquisition here is a chalipin, then it would work. So the fact that it fails shows you that the acquisition is being done through damim, and this braita, which is explicates on our Mishnah, seems to paint a scenario that is very similar to our Mishnah, which is that it must be that we're doing it through damim and not chalipin. Elamai. So what are you going to say now that it's a kinyan damim? Yochi emaresha. What are you going to do with the other half of the braita? The other half of the braita says, zahav koneh the kesef. That the zahav does make a kinyan on the kesef. Ketzad, how does that work? Machalo dinar shel zahav be'esrim v'chamisha dinar shel kesef. He sold him a gold coin for 25 silver coins. Kaven shemashach et the zahav. As soon as he makes a kinyan on the zahav, the silver, wherever it is, goes into the possession of the other party. That sounds like a barter transaction. If you were buying it through a monetary exchange, which the Gemara will say in 1 second, then when you make a kinyan on the zahav, you're now obligated to pay the silver, but there's no particular silver coin that automatically goes into the other person's possession. If you're talking about a barter transaction, then it makes sense that when you made a meshicha on the zahav, the kesef, wherever it is, goes into the possession of the other party. So that makes it sound that we're talking about kinyan chalipin. Imar bishlama b'chalipin, if we're talking about a kinyan chalipin over here, hainu d'tani nikneh kesef b'chol makom shu, then it makes sense that the kesef moves to the other party no matter where it's found. Eliyamar b'damim, if you're explaining this as a kinyan that is effectuated through currency or a purchase of money, hi, nikne kesef b'chol makom shehu. Why should it be that the silver, wherever it is, goes into the possession of the other party? Nitzchayim gavra mibayi. It should be that the person now is obligated to pay what he said he would pay for the gold coin, which is 25 silver coins. So he's obligated to pay. There's no particular silver that will go into the other party's possession. Tosfot over here says, doesn't the Gemara know the other half of the Mishnah? Or doesn't the Gemara know that there's another half to the Braita? Why is the Gemara trying to set up half the Mishnah this way without or almost ignoring the other half of the Mishnah? So Tosfot comes up with a way that you could explain the Mishnah and make it make sense that one aspect's talking about chalipin and damim and the other part is only talking about damim, and therefore the Gemara thought there was a way to manage through it until it came up with the questions that derive from the latter half of the Braita. So Amar Ravashi, Ravashi answers the question and says, La'olam bidamim. Now we're talking about a monetary transaction. Umay b'chol makom shu. What does it mean that anywhere that it's found, it goes into the possession of the other party? Kimot shehu means like it is, k'da'amar le, as he said to him. Basically, the kinyan locks in the terms of the transaction. So what it means, b'chol makom shu, means whatever your terms of the transaction were, that is now locked in place. If he says, I'm going to give you new minted coins, that's what I'm going to pay you with. Lo matzi hayav le manaki yishana. He cannot give it old coins. He not can give old coins in exchange. Afa gabda adifi minayu. Even though older coins are usually better because we know they've been accepted. When you have older coins around, that means that they've already been utilized in the marketplace and well accepted in the marketplace. So most people would favor taking older coins over newer coins. So the guy agreed to give him new coins. So then he comes and he gives him old coins. The guy says, what are you doing? I asked for new coins. He says, I'm giving you an upgrade. I want to give you an upgrade now. You were going to get this newer coin, which is not as readily accepted. Now give me an old coin, which is much more readily accepted. So he can say, no, I don't want it. I want the new coin. Why? My taima. I want to age the coins, quote unquote, age the coins, is I need this money for a long time. I'm going to use it as stored value, and I'm going to keep it around for a long time. So I know I need duration in these coins, and therefore I want newer coins because I know they'll last longer than the older coins. And therefore he has a reason why he wants the newer coins versus the older coins, even though most people would favor the older coins. It's like when you go to the rental car company, and they go, we've got good news for you. We're going to upgrade you. Instead of getting your sedan, we're going to give you a Jeep. We're going to give you a big van. And you say to them, listen, that's not what I want. Even though most people would appreciate getting the bigger car, the bigger item. But here and now, you have to have, it takes more gas. It's harder to park. So there are reasons why you may not want to upgrade. And same thing over here. What it means that b'chol makom she'hu doesn't mean wherever physically it's placed. Means whatever the terms of the transaction are now locked in, and you've obligated yourself to the terms of the transaction, and you can't change them. Even if you think it's an upgrade, you committed to something, you must carry out that commitment, and that's what it means here. So then the explanation of the Braita is that it was a currency purchase, it was a money purchase, and the reason that you get the silver wherever it is when you make an acquisition of the gold is not because it's a Kinyan Chalipin, but rather it means that you get the silver promise is what you must pay now. You must abide by that transaction. So now, Amar Papa, Afilu Lamanda Amar, Ein Matbea Naseh Chalipin, even according to the one who says that a coin cannot be made into Chalipin, Mi Averu Delo Avid Chalipin, it itself can't be the representative object in the Chalipin. Aknuye Miknu V'Chalipin, but it can be the object of the Kinyan. So you can do a Kinyan Sudar on money, even though money itself can't be the Kinyan Sudar. That's the statement of Rav Papa. Mida d'hava peira, the Rav Nachman. Similar to peirot. Peirot here means produce for Rav Nachman. I mentioned before the machlok between Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshet as to what can be used in a Kinyan Sudar. Rav Nachman believes you can only use a kli for a Kinyan Sudar. Rav Sheshet believes you can use a kli and even peirot. So according to Rav Nachman, the only way to effectuate a Kinyan Sudar is to use a kli. Nevertheless, according to Rav Nachman, Peir Le Nachman, Lafav Galdin Hu Lo Avdei Chalipin, even though it itself can't be the representative item for the Kinyan Chalipin, Aknuya Maknu B'Chalipin, you can't acquire them through a Kinyan Chalipin. So if you are buying fruits or vegetables, you can take a sudar, you can take a handkerchief, and the buyer can hand that over to the seller. The seller makes a Kinyan on it, and then the fruits and vegetables will transfer into the possession of the buyer. So you are able to effectuate a Kinyan Chalipin on fruits, even though you can't use the fruits as the Kinyan Chalipin or the Sudar for the Kinyan Chalipin. So too over here. Tivanami Loshna. So too by coinage. Even according to the one who says that coin itself cannot be used as the Kinyan Chalipin, as the Sudar, unless it can be acquired through a Kinyan Chalipin. Meiteve, is that really true? We have a Mishnah in Maaser Sheni that says, Hayahu made bigoren. He's out in the threshing area. Ve'ein biyado malt. He doesn't have money in his hands. Omer lo chaveiro. He says to his friend, Harei peirot halalu nutunim lecha b'matana. Says, these fruits are now given to you as a gift. Ve'chozer ve'omer. And then he says afterwards, Harei huin mechulalin ala ma'ot sheyesh li babayit. And now they are redeemed on the coinage that I have in the house. So it's clear that he has the money with which to do the redemption. He just doesn't have it on hand. And so what he does is he gives the produce to his friend. And then he says, I'm going to redeem the produce with the monies I have in the house. Why is he giving it to his friend? That has to do with the Torah law, which is that if the owners of the Maaser Sheni redeem it, they have to add on an additional chomesh, an additional 20%, which is really 25% the way that we calculate today. He would have to have 1.25 of the value of the Maaser Sheni in the redemption. If you redeem Maaser Sheni from a third party, you do not have to add on that 25%. So in order to save himself the 25%, he gets a good friend and he says, here, I'm giving you the Maaser Sheni as a gift. Then I'm going to redeem the Maaser Sheni on my money because now I become a third party to the Maaser Sheni. And by being a third party, I only have to redeem it at its fair value, not with the increased 25% on top. So now the Gemara says about that. Taima de imbi adomot. The only reason he did the transaction in this manner is because he has no money on hand. Ha im yesh bi yado ma'ot. But if he had on hand money, litnei lehu le'idach b'mishicha, then he should have given the coins to the other party with a mishicha, meaning that he would have handed the coins to them. Uparik, and then the friend would have done the redemption. Dehochi odif, because that is a better way to do it. Davalei nachri, because he is an outsider. As Rashi explains over here, from the optics of it, it's clear here that no matter which way he does it, it works in order for him to have to redeem it at its value and not at the additional 25%, because he's no longer the owner of the item. But if he does it in a manner where he gives all the produce to the other party, and then he redeems it with his own money, versus where he gives the money to the other party and lets the other party redeem it, the second or the latter method is much more optically looks like it's an outsider that's buying it. Because rather than him buying it in the end, which looks like he's buying his own produce, but simply handing it over to someone else, when he hands the money to the other party, then the other party is really coming and redeeming it. It looks like it's a third party that's coming and redeeming it. Even though it works in both directions, optically it would be much more appealing to have the money be given to the other party. So what's the failure here? The failure here is that you can't give the money to the other party because it's not present. It's not here. But if you say that coins can be acquired through a kinyan sudar, then he should be able to give the coins to the other party through a kinyan sudar. And even though they're not present here, they can do a kinyan sudar. And he will then be able to use the money to redeem it. The late sudar. Gemara says it's a case where he doesn't have a handkerchief on him. He doesn't have anything to do the kinyan chalipin with. So why don't you give it to him agav karka? We know that metaltalim, or objects, can be acquired through the acquisition of karka. Karka, you don't need to be present for that. Karka can be gifted shtar, chazaka, or kesef. You can grant him the rights to the karka. And with those rights to the karka, you can then also grant him the objects or metaltalim along with it, which is called a kinyan agav. It says, deleitle karka. He doesn't have any land. The individual whose produce is, it doesn't have any land. Vow made begorin, standing in a threshing floor. Dani begorin sheno shalo. It's his, not his gorin. It's not his threshing floor. Well, it's not his threshing floor and he has no karka. How does he have produce that needs to have maaser sheni taken off of it? That's because he is an aris. Could be that he is a sharecropper. Tosfot asks over here, why doesn't he just give him the money through what's called hoda'ah? This is a sheet of the Tosfot, the Rabbeinu Tam, they mentioned it, we saw this in the Gemara in Tubot as well, which is that if you admit that your money belongs to someone else, then it belongs to someone else. Hodat badin kemeya edim dami. There, the Rabbeinu Tam uses it for how does a chatan mechayev himself in money that he doesn't have. Well, if he says he has it, we believe him. So do over here. If you grant it to him through hoda'ah, then why shouldn't it work? So Tosfot over here says, even though maybe it would work, over here, the whole thing is somewhat of a haramah, where he's trying to get the third party to be the buyer of the object. Hashem knows that he doesn't own the object. Hoda'ah works is because other people don't really know or can't really ascertain, and therefore we just take him at his word. But God knows that he doesn't own that money, and when you admit that it's his money, it's not really his money, and therefore it's not going to work over here, and so Tosfot says that fails. So now the Gemara says, Ichbil tana leshminan gavar atilai delet levelo klom. So this Tana went through all of these crazy cases to tell us about a guy who's standing naked in land that he doesn't own in order to tell us this din. I mean, it makes it into a very, very narrow case or narrow situation in which he tells us this din. Elav shmamina, what is the more logical conclusion from this Mishnah? Ein bat be'a nikne b'chalipin shmamina. That you cannot acquire money through a kinyan chalipin. Just like matbeya, a coin, fails in being a kinyan sudar, so too it fails at being acquired through a kinyan chalipin. And so that would undermine what Rav Papa says, and that's what we'll deal with tomorrow after Rav Papa Hadarbi. Even Rabbah backed out of this and says that, according to the one who says that, Ema ben Ase Chalipim also agrees that you cannot acquire it through Chalipin. Now, the problem, as Tosfos points out, is that this is also a question on the one who says that, Matbea Nase Chalipin. So therefore, this would be a strong question against the position of Matbea Nase Chalipin. This would also be a problem, because if you can't effectuate a Kinyan Sudar on Kesef, then certainly you can't use Kesef as Chalipin. And therefore, it's a question on both the position of Rapapa, as well as the position of Rav and Levi, whoever has the position that Matbea Nase Chalipin. This Mishnah is a very strong refutation of that position, and therefore we conclude, Ein Matbea Nase Chalipin, as well as Ein Matbea Nikne Bechalipin Shmamina. Okay, we're going to stop here, 11 lines down on the top of Memvav Amud Aleph.